Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
Go Wolves!
Here's John Williams.
This is Sean. I'm a proud graduate of Joliet Junior College. Go Wolves! Go Salukis! I'm an SIUC grad.
Lord have mercy.
I'll explain why I just announced that in a minute. We're in the Allstate Skyline Studio. We're here weekdays 1 to 3, Saturdays 10 a.m. to noon. Good afternoon. It's not a bad afternoon. A little cloudy. We woke to some rain this morning, but wow, how did you dress today? I got my scarf and coat and gloves out. Brenda said, you're probably not going to need those. I said, well, I will now, but probably not when I come home this afternoon. Stepped outside and realized I was way overdressed.
Yep, I got a t-shirt, leather jacket, and a rain shell. And that's all.
Yeah.
Which stinks because I use my winter coat as a wallet, so I got to figure that out.
I know. That is one good thing about a winter coat is that there's a lot of pockets. They tend to be deep. You can get a lot of stuff in there. I found an orange in my pocket the other day.
Oh, nice.
Men don't have purses. I am a graduate of Joliet Junior College. And I never thought at the time about the vanity or absence of vanity of that. It was just kind of what we decided I was going to do. Actually, now that I think about it, and this isn't about me, but I'll just tell you my story. I tried to get into Northwestern University and didn't. We shopped around to a bunch of schools and decided that Carbondale would be the best place for me to go. But that was after I went to Joliet Junior College. And when I think about the education I got, I think the teachers and the classes and the opportunity I had at JJC was terrific. Now, I think times have changed, and it certainly just wasn't a thing on my family's radar at the time, certainly not on mine, right? But the idea that you would go to the College of DuPage or Joliet Junior College is not as impressive to the family as your kid going to Notre Dame or the University of Chicago or Northwestern. I think we need to sort of do everything we can to disabuse people of that. It's okay to have gone to or be going to Illinois State University or Northern Illinois or Chicago State or U of C or UIC. It's all good. You know, the most important thing is you find a fit, your kid gets a nice education, and then they grow up and have a fruitful life and pay taxes. That's the end game. And it's very easy to say when you don't have a kid who's a junior in college right now, or rather in high school. But I wish more celebrities who went to very ordinary schools would tweet that out. We know about the celebrities that tried to get their kids into high-priced schools, and you sort of at least understand that people get caught up in that. And I think this would be a good time if people said, well, I'm the CEO of General Motors, and I didn't graduate from Stanford. I graduated from Timbuk State, and that's okay.
Steve Jobs didn't go to college.
Some of those, too. I get that, but you know what worries me about that is that they're so freaking smart, Steve Jobs, that college couldn't contain them.
Yeah, that's true. You have to be kind of a unicorn.
In that case.
To survive.
Yeah. But I haven't seen that yet, and I wish I would. And I'm at least going to offer that.
Well, you went to SIU, and you're successful.
Well, even as I do this now, I hate the fact that I'm throwing myself out there as the model of success to which everybody could, you know, someday hope their kids would aspire. I think a lot of people might be listening now going, see, that's my point. I don't want my kid going to Joliet Junior College. Williams went there. Are you kidding me? We've got to do better than that. And I wasn't above the fray. I did fill out an application to Northwestern after my freshman year in junior college. And I'll never forget it. Because it was a lot of paragraphs that you had to write in an essay.
Like five essays.
Which was my strength. I was a good essay writer. I was a liberal arts kind of kid. But at the time, word processors and home computers had not been invented. It was 1978, 79. And I was trying to get into Northwestern. And so when you got your application, it was printed out on a sheet of paper, this is so rudimentary. Literally, they brought it into the cave with a torch, and I said to Ugg and Lack, get away from the table, I'm going to chisel out my answer. I got a pen out, and I wrote out my answers. But in doing so, I would sometimes misspell or make a mistake, and so I'd cross something out, and then start over again, maybe draw a neat arrow from the last word to the next word. I'd get to the end of the space that they had for your answer, and I still had more to say, so I'd write in the margin, going down the side, perpendicular to the question itself. The content was really good, but I'm not sure anybody got through it. Now, if I had been able to clickety-clack, copy and paste, cut, edit on the fly, maybe I would have had a better chance.
Or even like the add-on apps nowadays, like Grammarly, which as you're typing just an email, all of a sudden like a red line pops up and it tells you that you've misspelled something or, you know, that this sentence doesn't work and suggestions on how to fix your grammar and your spelling and punctuation.
I actually don't think they could have read my thing anyway. It was that hard. My handwriting was that bad.
Aw.
You know, and I suppose back at that time, there were some people who would write it all out and then give it to their mom or dad, and their mom or dad would take it to their secretary or somebody, and somebody would type it up for them in the margins, neat, nice, but that's not how we rolled. I thought there was something authentic about my application, but there was something illegible about my application, too. So there is that. A little later on, we'll talk to somebody that Steve Grzanich had on early this morning, and that is this Dr. Fraud guy, just to talk a little bit about what's happened here and what the implications are. You know who I talked to for a while today, though, was a woman who is in the business of, she's a college admissions counselor, a for-hire private college admissions counselor. And I said, is this a bad day for you all? I mean, you know, this is a bad apple, but maybe now it's cast a shadow on the entire industry. And she seemed to not feel like it was that big of an imposition for her and what she does. And then she said some very interesting things about if you do want to legitimately get your kid into the right school, which may not be the University of Chicago or Notre Dame anyway, right? I mean, don't overreach. Jared Kushner's dad gave $2.5 million to Harvard right afterwards. Jared Kushner, who had fine grades, but maybe not stellar grades. Then Jared Kushner gets into Harvard. And, you know, that may be great for Jared Kushner to get into Harvard. But then what if the reason you couldn't get into Harvard is because you're not good enough? You can't get the job done. I guess he graduated from Harvard, so maybe there's plenty of kids who could get through it but just can't get in.
I really think the acceptance level is higher than the graduation, the ability to graduate for a lot of those schools. You know what I'm saying?
No.
Well, I think that it's harder to get into those schools than it is to graduate from them.
Exactly.
In many cases.
Exactly. Yeah. I suppose a lot of kids, once they get in, may discover that it's not as hard as they thought. Or the kids whose parents were able to somehow finagle them in, even though the kid wouldn't win in an open competition, they were still able to graduate, yeah. Well, Jared may be a case in point, I don't know.
I saw that story yesterday, and I'm like, oh, man, it took 20 minutes, you know, before it became a Trump story.
Well, Donald Trump Jr. tweeted, this is the president's son, but I believe the president retweeted it. Is it just me or is everyone in Hollywood strangely silent today? Come on, guys. You're always vocal in forcing your opinions on everyone. What changed? Kellyanne Conway tweeted at Lori Loughlin and Felicity Huffman, indicted for lying and buying spots in college. They worry their daughters are as stupid as their mothers. I thought that tweet by Kellyanne Conway, saying that the daughters are maybe as stupid as the mothers, was especially unenlightened in that, A, the president himself paid $25 million 2 years ago to students who said they were duped at his defunct university. And then there's the Jared Kushner thing, which is in-house. Maybe we shouldn't just go there. And I just think it's mean to the daughters, who may not have done anything wrong. Maybe they did. We don't know. And why is a presidential advisor throwing such hate at people whose lives and crimes have nothing to do with her job anyway? By the way, about tweeting, The president has been very busy on Twitter today. I don't talk about this much, but I just couldn't help but notice that in the last 24 hours, the president has, I don't know what a president is supposed to do, but clearly this one is able to do his job and also tweet out random observations. And a tweet takes, think about what it takes. It takes the idea, then the crafting in your mind of how you're going to do it, then the picking up of your phone and putting your nose down and doing that, and then the, in theory, reading it, making sure you got it right, etc. A tweet takes longer to do than it takes to read. In the last 24 hours, the president has tweeted about the following things. The major national emergency at our border, that Democrats are for open borders and crime, that Nancy Pelosi has softened her stance on impeachment, the Steele dossier he tweeted about. He retweeted Diamond and Silk's comments about political bias. If you don't know who Diamond and Silk are, look that up and realize that they're one of the only 45 people on earth the president follows. He tweeted about crooked Hillary. He tweeted about fake Melania, which was surprising. The Lisa Page transcripts. The California halting of the death penalty for, quote, 737 stone-cold killers. He tweeted, keep America great, exclamation point, and make America great again, in a separate tweet. He tweeted about Jay Leno on Fox and Friends and how boring the other late-night shows are. He tweeted about how great the economy is doing, how great his administration has been. He tweeted that his has been the most successful first 2 years of a presidency ever. He tweeted about the witch hunt hoax. He tweeted out a painting of Uncle Sam praying in church. He tweeted that Clinton and the dossier still deserve our attention. He tweeted about Andrew Cuomo as a presidential harasser. He tweeted that wages are going up for American families. He tweeted out a video of him signing a conservation act. He tweeted about more Republican-appointed judges. He retweeted Mike Pence supporting emergency declaration. And that's not even all of it. And that's in the last 24 hours. So I don't know what presidents are supposed to do, but ours has a lot of free time to do those. Here's my... I only had one tweet in the last 24 hours. This, Elif, can you play the sound? Steve, did you see my Twitter account? I don't know if you can follow me.
I'm sure I do.
Tell me if you know what this is. Hit it, Elif. That's a video of what? You'd never guess if you hadn't seen it.
I haven't seen it.
It's so we were walking along the lake yesterday, and there's still ice on the water. But it's melting so quickly right now that it's sort of cleaving off in plates, and the pieces of ice that are cleaving off are shimmering across the top like they're being spun by an invisible hand. So you have these plates of ice just clickety-clacking and slamming and slipping around, and some of them are moving really fast. And when you walk along, say, Belmont Harbor, you'll hear, it's like, it sounds like popcorn. And you go over and go, what is this? And it's the ice melting and fracturing and then popping up and slipping along the top of the water. I've never seen anything like it. I don't want to say I'm blowing up Twitter, but right now I've got 34 hearts by one of my posts.
So, blown it up, bud.
So, Donald Trump, eat your heart out.
I saw that video, by the way. It was great.
It was kind of cool, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. And then I was trying to figure out where it was at.
And then I retweeted it because I said, just so you know, I didn't speed this up. The ice is skating along so quickly, it looks like I sped it up. But no, that's just going, phew, phew, phew. Chunks of ice is zipping along the top.
You know, you guys are going to make fun of me for this comparison, but it reminds me of the Frozen 2 preview.
Frozen 2 preview?
Yeah, there's like a... The trailer that's come out where Elsa is throwing ice at the water.
Oh, no kidding.
On top of the water, it's just freezing and moving and breaking into pieces. And yes.
I'm not going to make fun of you for that. I thought you were going to say it reminds you of that one time you ran 1,000 miles and there was ice in this story somehow.
Yeah, no, it's all this winter.
We would have made fun of you for that. Mary, you've been holding a while. What do you want to say? You're on the air.
Yeah, John, the biggest thing, number one, my first thought was when you said you went to community college and then, you know, went on. The thing is, number one, it's what you put into the thing. It's not the school necessarily. It's the quality of the student, too, you know. And I think people are just missing some of that. But also, it's like it's not where you go. It's what you make of it. And I just know with my children, I had one accepted to Notre Dame, and we ended up deciding we couldn't afford to send them there. A beautiful thing, but you know, sometimes it's not always worth it, and he ended up going on to a different school, Auburn, and made beautiful work out of it, and now he's there for his master's at Notre Dame. So sometimes kismet comes around. But also the other thing that upsets me the most about this whole situation is all those kids who might have been, I know it's not 100 kids getting it, but who is 101 on that list waiting to get into that school, Yale, yeah. Georgetown. And, you know, that would upset me the most as a parent. If I knew in that year my kid was applying to that school, because I knew it was a, like, when we were applying to Notre Dame, it was like, oh, wait, it was bated breath. And then, gosh, if I had known that year some other, no offense, somebody celebrity kid, punk or whatever got in, and I didn't knew that year my kid didn't get in, I'd be furious right now. I mean,
yeah, boy, especially if there is any way to demonstrate that your kid was, in fact, the very next student that would have been
in
this long line.
Well, yeah. Especially because parents and children who are trying to get into these colleges are taking on extra jobs. They're working extra hours. They're trying to do something to prepare to get into those schools.
They're learning Chinese.
Well, like, so, you know, parents taking this extra job after they're done with their full-time job in order to stock away money, and then all of a sudden they find out that they lost out to some billionaire, millionaire.
We're going to pursue this later on. I really appreciate your call. Congratulations on your, was that a son that went to Auburn?
Well, he went to Auburn, and he majored in engineering. He worked for 8 years, and now he's going for his master's at Notre Dame, graduating in May. Yes.
So being an engineer, he's close to retirement then, right? That's pretty awesome.
Well, he's...
I am so happy. He's only one of three, but it's like one more out of the box.
Yeah. When you're out of college jail, it's a beautiful thing. Call me back, okay?
Okay. Bye. I love you guys.
Thanks, Mary. We appreciate the call. This is the smartest thing maybe anybody's said all day today. It was somebody who texted us about your college choices. John, calculus is not any different at Harvard than it is at NIU. I know it's up for me. Making sure I'm not in too deep. Thank you, Steve Bertrand, 138. What'd you say the current temperature is, Mr. Steve Bertrand, in the newsroom?
It's 47 degrees.
Trying to get to 55 today, Steve. We going to hit 55?
Actually, the forecast we're reading is 59.
How about them apples?
We've got a ways to go.
Could use a little more sunshine. By the way, just a bunch of texts, and we'll talk about this in the 2 o'clock hour, and tomorrow I believe we'll have an admissions consultant on. But this person said, John, worked for a doctor who had twin daughters. Could have very well sent them to college anywhere. They went to Joliet Junior College first. Then they went off to bigger colleges. JJC is a great place. I'm a graduate of JJC. 630, I once read that Ivy League East schools are harder to get into but easier to graduate from. That was what Steve wondered about earlier. And that the University of Chicago is easier to get into but harder to graduate from. It's the flip of that. U of C is where fun goes to die. Phil Vitale is here from the Chicago Tribune. Hi, Phil Vitale.
Hi there.
Restaurant critic over there. John, why is it that two of the indicted 50 Hollywood are from Hollywood, but the majority are not, but the talk is about sleazy, crooked Hollywood? Oh, that's because it's Hollywood. By the way, that guy said that ran this fraudulent college admissions company, that he did this for 800 people. So we know about the 50 indicted in Boston, but they may have another 750 to go after.
I don't know if you heard my headlines, but ABC7 is reporting, and actually DePaul confirming with the statement that the singer, his son, went to DePaul.
Yeah.
And during that time period, Singer made $150,000 in donations through his charity to the school. They said that they don't see any evidence that that's related to the indictment, but that's is what happened.
I was thinking about the Huffman kids and William H. Macy. They have two daughters, I believe, and then Laughlin has two daughters. I believe one of them is at Southern Cal University. She's a lifestyle branding internet person.
unemployed.
Or rich.
You know,
or both.
What you do is they send you a rug, you roll it out in your dorm room and go, so look at this rug, everybody, and then you get a million hits and you get $1 million, and that's a way to make a living.
Yeah.
But you know who it's really unfair to, this whole scandal, is maybe the kids. I mean, maybe the kids are complicit, but maybe they're not. Mm-hmm. You know, they did want to go to Stanford or Yale and couldn't get in. And then mom and dad said, well, let me work on it. You know, I just wonder how embarrassing and unfair maybe this is. Maybe not. We don't know. But I'll bet there's 800 kids right now that are hiding under their pillow in a dorm room somewhere now. Like maybe this kid at DePaul. thanks a lot, Dad.
Right.
You know, now I'm that kid.
Wish my dad had offered me $100,000 not to go to college. Could have saved everybody some money.
I just wanted to check one more text here. John, my son went to Harper Junior College in Palatine and then on to Roosevelt University for his bachelor's degree in business. His diploma doesn't say he went to Harper. I get that point, too. If you go to a junior college and you think that's somehow subpar, my diploma from SIU doesn't say JJC.
Right. There's asterisk saying he was only here for 2 years.
Just so you know. He really didn't do it the way the rest of us do it. John, having a degree from Stanford versus SIU is like owning a Mercedes versus a Chevy. But in the end, they both get you to the same destination. Signed a fellow, Joliet Junior College in Southern Illinois, Carbondale, Saluki. Here's the difference, though. Going to Stanford gets you there quicker.
And there are apparently 800 sets of parents that do not agree that either one is just as good,
as the other. Somebody said calculus is calculus in both schools, but there are lists of schools where if you do graduate from here, your earning potential is this much greater over your lifetime, or that first job is this much easier to get. If you do graduate with a degree at Notre Dame, the network of employers out there who are looking for fellow Notre Dame grads is much better than it is for those of us who graduated from Carbondale.
Sure.
If you graduate from Medill at Northwestern, you can pretty much walk into any large news media network.
Exactly.
You can walk in, but you might walk out with a see you later because hiring is not exactly at a peak.
Okay, but that's the problem with the industry, not the college.
Right. No, that's the thing. If you're a prestige college, probably get that first interview is probably a lot easier to get. You probably win a lot of ties. They're trying to figure out who gets in.
Exactly.
So it's more than just a very impressive sweatshirt that you can wear during your 4 years and doing your alumni thing. People think it opens doors.
But if you get your first job in Sycamore, I'd rather have the student loan debt burden from SIU than Northwestern.
True,
yeah,
but
no
a lot
kidding.
Of these parents paying these bribes, student debt is not an issue.
Yeah, but a lot of them aren't. I mean, if you were just talking about the average Jane or Joe and their kid can get into Northwestern or can get into ISU, the debt that kid's going to walk away from at Northwestern is, I'll bet, five times what it is for ISU.
Oh, yeah. That's probably fair. I'd have to look it up, but yeah.
Hey, listen, let's talk about the restaurant business and food with you, Phil Vitale. After Steve Bertrand says one other thing, Steve, refresh our memory now. You just did a story, ABC did, about the
this
Max 8 737s. What's the story?
No. Yeah, well, the President Trump is grounding them now in the U.S.
He has the authority to do that.
Evidently. Yeah, the FAA.
Okay.
It's been other governments that have done it around the world, so.
So I wonder what happens to people who have a flight scheduled for today or tomorrow on an airline that uses that airplane. Do they have other airplanes they're rerouting?
They can try to add flights. They can they'll try to add capacity with other flights.
Yeah.
Southwest I think has the most aircraft, and then I think American Airlines, United doesn't have quite as many.
Hmm.
I mean it's
It would seem to me like this would create a massive, I don't know how many of those planes are out
massive,
there.
I don't think it's massive, right. I mean, there are a lot of planes out there, but I don't think it's going to be overwhelming.
More news at 3, it's 2, in the next 15 minutes, it's 1:45. Phil Vitale, the noted restaurant critic for the Chicago Tribune, is here. You can read him at chicagotribune.com/dining. His stuff also appears in the print edition. Yes, they do print it on paper. You did the Reader's Choice Award a couple of weeks ago. You were gone last Wednesday.
I was.
We walked through some of these ourselves, but let's just quickly hit some of the highlights from the Reader's Choice Awards.
Well, the Readers made ABBA the best new restaurant of the year. ABBA is in the Fulton Market area. It is the is a sibling restaurant to Ema, the River North restaurant that also does very well. That's Mediterranean focus. So although Abba has a little more beef and lamb on the menu than Ema, that which has more vegetable dishes. But that's, I mean, if, I don't know if anyone's got in the audience has tried to get into Abba, but you pretty much need a crowbar. It's really hard to you get in and you've got an hour, 2 hour, whatever wait.
Because of your recommendation, we're going to Meet Tequila.
Oh yeah. That is a fun place. Very
best,
small.
Best Mexicans, said the,
right.
Readers of the Chicago Tribune.
Right, and there were some really good Mexican restaurants to choose among. And she, the chef and owner, Diana Davila, she lapped the field practically. She almost got as many votes as every other candidate combined.
Really, at Me Tocaya, M-I-T-O-C-A-Y-A, Me Tocaya.
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 Mm-hmm.
By the way, that's on Logan in Chicago, metocoya.com. You said at the end of there, this is an unsurprising and well-deserved choice.
Yeah.
Best Chinese, Sun Hua Barbecue.
Yeah. They're extremely popular, have been for years because of their Peking duck, which is something of an icon in Chicago. Everybody goes to Sun Hua for the Peking duck. It's pretty funny. They get As Louisa, who wrote it up, pointed out, there are a lot of good dishes on the menu, and but they're kind of pigeonholed into the, you go there for the Peking duck, and no wonder, because the ducks are hanging in the window, and they make a great show out of it.
5039 North Broadway, so they're not too far from where I live, I guess, huh? North Broadway? I live off of Halstead. Let's see here.
Right, where Halstead and Broadway, they're the same for a while, and then they split. And
right.
They,
right, right,
right.
Okay.
So they're uptown.
Chubby roasted ducks glittering with fat and slabs of ruby red barbecue pork swing gently from metal hooks in the window of this uptown staple. That makes you either really want to go there or not go there.
Right.
But that's the that's what greets you when you walk in there.
It's the kind of place when you call and make the reservation, say, by the way, I'm going to be ordering the duck. So you don't get there and they've run out.
Oh, really?
Oh, really.
Best airport food, Tortas Frontera. So if you are at O'Hare or Midway and you do think you're going to eat somewhere, it would be wise to look for T-O-R-T-A-S, Tortas Frontera.
Mm-hmm. That's Rick Bayless doing another one of his Frontera things. It's a great little sandwich shop. It's only in Terminal 1 at O'Hare. So it really helps if you're flying United. So you don't have to walk so far, although you can walk there from Terminal 2 without using the whole, the tram again. And yeah, they're terrific. They're terrific. Prepared to order sandwiches.
I agree with the Tribune readers about the best views. I haven't maybe been to all of the eligible ones, but I've been to Cindy's, which is right across from, I guess, is that Grant Park or Millennium Park?
It's
right across from Grant Park. It's at 12 South Michigan Avenue. And the rooftop is terrific. It can get crowded up there, but it's a wonderful view.
It is. It's
a fun place to have a cocktail.
Right. That's one of the places you walk into the lobby and you look, and there's the line for the elevator that takes you up to Cindy's.
And don't be entirely discouraged by that, because when you do get up, you do get out. So it's not like there's another line. But rather than crowd everybody up on the rooftop or in a vestibule there, they crowd them in the lobby downstairs.
Right.
Wait your turn, and when you get up there, it's just such a fun cocktail. It's such a great view of Michigan Avenue and then the park and then the lake, and it just feels like, wow, I'm in Chicago. This is cool.
Yeah.
It's Cindy's.
And it's not so high up that everybody's down there.
Right.
Ants.
You're like maybe, eight stories up, ten stories up,
something like that. And it's got a real sense of scale then. You see the city as you should see the city.
Yeah, no kidding. Okay, now you have a new restaurant to review a new restaurant review.
Yep.
Let's talk about a place that you gave 3 stars to in a minute. Phil Vitale's here. He's the restaurant critic for the Chicago Tribune, back from some travels of his own, by the way. Would you have cared if you were flying and it was a Max 8?
I don't know. I guess I would, especially since I was flying back from Singapore, which meant on the way down there from San Francisco, it was a 17-hour flight. And on the way back, thanks to a huge tailwind, it was a 14-hour flight. But that's a long flight over the ocean. And I probably would have, closed my eyes, sing a religious song or something and try to keep...
I just tell myself, whenever I fly, even if I'm nervous about turbulence or anything, that there's thousands of planes with hundreds of thousands of people in the sky right now, and there will be tomorrow and the next day and the next day and the next day and the next day. And you do not hear about airplane crashes because they do not happen.
Right.
And when they do, yeah, it's news and it's terrifying. But is it safe? I'll bet that somebody could come up with a calculation right now about how safe even the MAX 8 jets are right now. And it still might be safer than the Uber that's about to pull up in front of your house. Mm-hmm. I'll bet you it's still relatively safe, but maybe prudent to figure out what's going on here.
Right, exactly. You have to, I mean, two crashes, they don't know why, and I would want to know why before I put the same plane back up in the air. But I'm one of these people that, you know, we get on the big, I was on this massive bus, a Boeing Dreamliner, you know, a million seats, six across.
Yeah.
No, nine across, three. And we start gathering
speed
up on the runway, and I'm looking and say, how are we getting this beast up in the air?
Everybody pick up your feet.
Right. And when it goes up in the air, I say, good brief, they did it. They really did it. It's always a little miracle to me.
I think we take for granted air flight.
Right.
Or flight. It's
3 million pounds, and it just goes up in the air and stays there.
Yes.
I throw a feather in the air, it comes back down eventually.
And there's beverage service.
Right.
Eugen.
That is the new restaurant on Randolph Street in the space that used to belong to Grace.
So it's just before or after the Kennedy, then? Just before or after
just
the NRC?
Just of the, yeah, of the Dan.
So just on the lakeside of the, is it the Dan Ryan there, technically?
I always forget which way. I call it Dan Ryan until they make me stop.
Well, but you're on Randolph and the highway.
Yep.
This side of the highway.
On the east side, yeah.
And you gave it 3 stars.
Yeah.
That's the Kennedy.
Thank you. It is the Kennedy.
Thank you. At least I didn't call it the Borland or whatever. Anyway, yes, this is a restaurant. It's 3 stars. It's kind of funny in that 3 stars is probably not what they're aiming for, given their pricing and given the way they staff the restaurant.
It's $200 a person for the tasting menu.
Right. Well, that doesn't include beverage or tax or tip.
Wow.
So I was in there with my wife and twice and with just doing the basics and the usual tip. It was like $899.
So the Tribune spent $1,600-$1,700 on this review and food.
Yes.
And then if they pay you, it's even more.
Right. When you go with add my salary, that's like $1,635 or something on a per hour basis.
So what's the cuisine like? What is it of?
The chef is Marie Katsumura, who is the daughter of the late Yoshi Katsumura, whose restaurant Yoshi's has been a major establishment in the Lakeview neighborhood for many, 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 many years. And she's doing food that sort of has echoes to her ethnic origins, but at the same time is very French training informed and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
And so you start the first course will be a series of little bitty bites, and one of them will be like braised octopus with Perigord truffle. So you got the little bit of the same kind of French informed Asian cooking that her dad did for decades.
This is called Eugen, Yugen.
Mm-hmm.
And as you may know, it's this side of the Kennedy on Randolph. It is a 3-star restaurant that is trying to get even maybe better service or food on the table in front of you than that. 3 stars is excellent by your standards.
Mm-hmm.
But remember, it's $205 for the tasting menu per person. So that's maybe something you should pay attention to.
Well, there is a little front vestibule, a little front area that serves cocktails and little bar snacks. So the nice thing is if you're curious about the place, you can go in there and not spend a lot and still get at least a sense of what's going on.
Phil Vitale's always a proponent of playing these places that way, and here's maybe a chance to try that.
Yeah.
I'm out of time. Read him online, chicagotribune.com/dining, in print in the Tribune on Wednesdays. They got a big section. Welcome back. Nice to see you.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
We do.
Here's John Williams.
It can be upsetting at times. It's 2:08. We're in the Allstate Skyline Studio till 3, Saturdays from 10 to noon.
Lord have mercy.
And John, you don't know when you're on Saturdays, 10 to noon. Remember, on social media, I'm WGN King John. Facebook was working slow for us today, but it's up on my Twitter page, and Instagram was slow for us today, too. But at least on Twitter, we'll get it on the other platforms. The really remarkable video I posted of the ice melting on the lake in Chicago. And as it crashes and cracks, it literally splinters off into thin plates and then goes skating across the surface. It makes a sound like popcorn. That video is on my Twitter page. And not to brag a lot, because we all look for a big social footprint, but I've got 34 little hearts next to that
Holy camoly.
Enjoy
34.
Them.
How many family members?
34.
They're going to be hidden soon.
Yeah, they're all going to, by that you mean the ice is going to melt and it's all going to be gone?
Oh, no, I'm talking about your likes and your retweets. Twitter has made some announcements today of some changes that are coming, and they're going to hide likes and retweets. Because, you know, sometimes they make people feel bad.
What? Since when did Twitter care about anybody's feelings? Really? I mean, that's surprising to me. Well, maybe that's good. It takes the pressure off, right?
Yeah, I guess so.
John, how do you justify athletes for years have been getting into schools with subpar grades? This is part of the ongoing conversation we're all having about who gets into college, how, and why.
There are a lot of people who get into college who don't get in strictly by their academics, I think. I mean, so that's why when we talk about the...
Said Felicity Huffman somewhere.
Well, when you talk about the 100 first student, you know, I think, okay, but really, there are so many different ways to get into a school that it's not pure, just aside from these people not, you know, paying off the... SAT people.
Right, but that's a bad thing, right?
Oh, yeah,
Steve?
Yeah, it's bad.
Hey, Steve, that's bad, right?
It is bad, but there are other people who have advantages, too. Like, you know, this was for, these people were supposedly on the crew. So if you're a rower, you're put ahead of other people.
And by the way, not that many women and men in high school row. So if you are good at crew, or even just have a good back, I know somebody who got into a school with a scholarship to crew who never crewed before, but the school needed that. They had more scholarships open up on this women's team. So somebody leapfrogged over somebody that way. And by the way, we've always known that if you're wealthy and famous and you make a donation to a school, that your kid might get into that school. And we might not love that, but we've never seen that as fantastically corrupt. It was just one of the privileges that come with being wealthy in America. And this is another, and wait a minute, this is not another example of that, though, right? Because kid on the football team who has a scholarship provides value to the school, he can actually play football. These kids couldn't play football. These kids weren't on a crew team.
Right.
These kids didn't have the grades, but they just had money.
Right. And so, and then what if, you know, if your mom makes a $100,000 donation to the school and you get, a few points for that, is that... bad? Schools need to raise... DePaul put out a statement and said, look, we solicit contributions from a variety of people. They're always in the business of fundraising. Could there not be a reward for... It's their school.
If the point is that the whole process is subjective and not perfect or pure, I get that. For instance, I'm open to the idea that some of the schools want a diverse student population. So while you might be the most meritorious, they may want a kid from a rural school in central Illinois.
Right. And when you say diverse, you're talking about geography.
I am. Yeah. And by the way, ask the University of Illinois about that.
I brought that up with Bill and Wendy today. You know, I said you can't take every kid from New Trier High School because then you wouldn't have anyone from Marion High School.
And maybe that would add as much diversity to that school as getting an African-American kid or a Hispanic kid. Maybe a kid from rural Kansas is actually attractive to the experience that the students go to at the school.
I learned a lot about cheese because rural Wisconsin kids went to Marquette.
Bill Cressy is the professor of fraud that you heard earlier today on WGN, if you were up between 5 and 6, with our Steve Grzanich. Bill, jump into this conversation. What did you want to say about all of that?
Okay. Schools can pretty much, as you've been pointing out, make the criteria for, you know, putting together their student body. The problem here was the schools would put together their criteria, and then this elaborate plot would get these kids in where they would appear to fit the criteria, but in fact, it was all just a big fraud.
And that's what you study, fraud. You call yourself Professor Fraud, right?
I have trademarked the name, yes.
Okay, but then what... Do you think that the universities, which are saying we didn't know anything about this, what's your guess about that?
Well, clearly, some people at the university knew about it, and this is mostly the coaches and some folks in the athletic departments at these schools, because the guy who seems to be the mastermind of this, again, everything is alleged, Rick Singer, he was a independent college admissions counselor. And he started doing that about 12, 13 years ago. Then about 6 years ago is apparently when he came upon this scheme, where he realizes that schools have a couple of exceptions to the usual way of admitting students. One is they would have designated slots for admission for particularly good athletes. So, of course, the football team would get a number and the basketball team, but those would be too obvious. So he went towards these minor sports, water polo, and then approached those coaches, knowing that these coaches aren't getting paid anything near where the head football coach would be getting paid, and say, hey, how would you like to make a couple of $100,000? We'll send you somebody, we'll send you an application for a student, and you designate that student as a recruited student for the crew, for the sailing team, for the water polo team, for the tennis team.
Yeah.
And tennis was one of the big ones, because he also had, working on this scheme, a couple of guys who ran a tennis facility in Southern California, who would then say, oh, yes, this person, this young man or woman is a accomplished tennis player. And they would put together this portfolio, including sometimes Photoshopped photos, sometimes stock photos of other young people.
I understand that, but it still makes you wonder, doesn't it, Bill, how they got away with it? I mean, because even then, while it's not a high-profile sport, wouldn't the other kids on the tennis team and their parents go, that kid can't play at this level? Something's fishy here.
Would never play. They would come up, this is kind of reading between the lines of the indictment. They would say, oh, they got injured, but they're admitted now, and they quit the team. They can't force them to play. They weren't scholarship athletes. They were just admitted. So as long as the parents paid the tuition, they were admitted. They, they stay in the school.
What do you think of this for a penalty? Carol, you're on WGN. What did you want to say? You're on the air.
I was just going to mention that the stars, the movie stars or screen stars that have been accused of paying money to get their kids into those schools, that, in fact, they should then be fined to find kids that have legitimately passed the test to get in, and then they have to pay a four-year tuition for them.
Somebody else said this. Bill, thank you, Carol. Bill, you're on WGN. What was your thought?
Yeah, my thought was kind of like the same as the last caller there. My theory is the two are the two film stars or whatever they are that they're really after now. And the rest of my opinion is that take the kids that are in, they're still in school, put them on an independent testing program somewhere.
Yeah.
See if they pass the test, the same kind of test you'd have to do or whatever you do to enter college at the beginning.
Right, and if you don't, you're out.
You don't pass the test. You're out.
Okay, hold on a second, Bill. Thank you for the call. Bill, I got just a minute. What's your reaction to all of that?
I think that will probably happen in the lawsuits because, again, they were the parents were charged with mail fraud, and there can be hefty fines along with prison terms for that. All of the folks central to the scheme, the indictments call for getting back all of the money, millions of dollars that were paid, including they even want to forfeit their personal homes and things like that. One of the real sad things about this whole story is the way that they've exploited the ability to that the students who have learning difficulties are allowed to take the standardized tests privately with a proctor and give extended time. Well, they would send these students to professionals who would say that they have learning difficulties so that they could get that situation where they would take the test privately by a proctor that got paid off, and then they would changed the answers on the questions so that they ended up with better scores than they deserved.
This all is sounds so shameless. It's not just a little ironic that William H. Macy's show is that, and he's shameless in that, too. I'm out of time, but let's visit again down the road, maybe this week or next, as this story continues to develop, Professor Fraud.
Sounds good, John.
Yeah, thanks for your time. I have been a fan for, well, I want to say a long time, but it's only been up there for a year, of the Art on the Mart, the beautiful laser light display on the side of the Merchandise Mart on the river in Chicago. Cynthia Noble is here. She's the executive director of that. Cynthia, welcome back. How are you?
Thank you, John. I'm well.
Is it up and running? When do we see it again?
Tonight. It's the perfect day to tune in. We launched in September of last year, and we're so excited to have our second iteration beginning today, 15 minutes after sunset.
15 minutes after sunset, which now that we've sprung forward is going to be around, what, about 7:30, something
maybe
like that?
Maybe even a bit earlier, 7:15.
Yeah, yes. No kidding. And then what will we see on the side of the Merchandise Mart?
Well, the side of the Merchandise Mart, first of all, is 2.5 acres, which to help us conceptualize that is more than 2 football fields. And we're going to see a series of new projections, some in line with the Year of Chicago Theater and others that will complement those projections.
One of the artists involved in that is sitting next to you. Answer this, and then we'll bring John in here too. How often is the Merchandise Mart going to be illuminated that way?
The Merchandise Mart projects 10 months of year, March through December, 5 nights a week until summer, which will actually extend to 7 days per week. But for now, Wednesdays through Sundays, 15 minutes after sunset.
15 minutes and for a couple of hours each night?
Yes, a 2-hour window each evening. So we have several projections that will loop throughout that 2-hour window.
John, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks.
John Boshi?
Boshi, yes.
And you are an artist?
Yep, I'm really a theater designer, designing media for live performance, for dance, theater, and opera.
Oh, I see. So if I went to the to an opera or a theater production, some of the light and imaging I'd see in the background, et cetera, would be something you came up with.
Absolutely. Most of what I do is actually projected images as a part of live performance. So rather than painting scenic drops, we can produce projected images that can respond to the story or the music of the performance.
But this is not just light. This is a particular kind of light, right?
We're using a system that the Mart has installed starting last year of 3,000 lumen projectors. So this is millions of lumens of light that can form a single video image that covers that entire 2.5 acres.
And I said laser, but maybe that's wrong. It's not laser light.
Technically, no, but it gives that same impression.
It has
of
that
great
sort
brilliance.
Of clarity, right, and
clarity
brilliance.
And precision and covering this amazing surface.
Yeah, and then the images aren't just static and projected. There's motion in there, too, right? Right? So I guess a computer knows when to dim and illuminate certain lights, something like that?
Right. We have a system that is integrating both the architectural lighting on the facade and the video content that we produce. So outside of the projection system, we sit in our studios and work on a standard kind of screen and produce images that end up being, you know, a city block wide and half a block tall. So it's great fun to see these things animated in our studio and then projected at large scale on the Mart.
And I'd like to add that although we're projecting moving image, this is so different and unique in contrast with a movie screen. These are works of art. It's the Mart's a gift of public art to the city, and it's a completely new platform that allows us to present artworks in a completely new way.
I said it was the biggest such display in the world. Is that correct?
Absolutely. In fact, one fun fact, we're applying.
It should be.
To...
I said it. I mean, shame on me if it's not. But I thought it was. Keep going.
You're absolutely in line because we're actually applying for the Guinness record on this on the largest projection and permanent projection system in the world.
Yeah. I guess the mind reels. This is what I did with you guys last year, right? I said, well, let's do this, let's do that. And I guess on one hand, it could be something abstract but beautiful, or it could be something that's representative, like maybe a savanna with trees or something like that. What are your thoughts about that?
Absolutely. And we see a little bit of both of those in the new images that are being unveiled. So there's a studio from Turkey that has created some abstract projections, Studio Ouch. And they've done some very beautiful kind of abstract and kind of computer-generated type effects. My approach has been to do something that connects with the City of Chicago's celebration of the Year of Chicago Theater. And most of my work as a theater designer has helped me connect with people who are doing great performances. So I'm producing seven soliloquies or solo performances, where there are individual performers telling a very short story, something that lasts from a minute to 2.5 minutes in length, and the images of that performer and other images that evokes their story are being seen and pouring out.
So I'll see human images projected on the side of the mart then?
Absolutely.
Will they be speaking to me or just doing something physical?
There is an audio component. This is a completely immersive experience. So don't forget to bring your earbuds. And when you're standing on the Riverwalk or on Wacker Drive between Franklin and Orleans, you can tap into our website, art on themart.com, and listen to the audio that accompanies these moving images on the facade.
Okay, so they've been dormant for a couple of months. They're kicking it back up again in March. You have a special display coming up on St. Patrick's Day, if I'm not mistaken. Is that right?
That's right. So just as we're aligning with this initiative through the Department of Cultural Affairs and Special Events, the Year of Chicago Theater, we're also aligning with other cultural traditions in the city. So for those celebrating St. Patrick's Day, beginning tonight through Sunday evening, the 17th, you can also enjoy a special festive St. Patrick's Day projection.
Last question. How do I consume it? Are there benches? Are there bleachers? Should I just walk over there? I mean, we know where the merchandise mart is, but there's a river and some roads. So how do people view it?
Absolutely. Take a walk on the lovely river walk. The weather's starting to invite that. Pedestrians along Wacker Drive on the upper level. There are benches, so make yourself comfortable and please come and view.
Or just drive real slow, which people do sometimes too.
We encourage people to view it while walking rather than driving.
But you're already looking at your phone. Don't look at the merchandise mart. Find a way to get there without being in your car. Although you will do that. Executive Director Cynthia Noble from the Art on the Mart display and lighting designer John Boschi. Art on the Mart, thanks for coming in. That's what we need. A little more sunshine, although... Has 49 and 53 ever felt better, huh? Two major stories today, and neither of them are Paul Manafort, who must be thinking, really, you just doubled my sentence, and I'm not even in the top bill? Come on now. Maybe he's not thinking that. I don't know what he's thinking. Last text about the college admission scandal. John, I work for J.P. Morgan. All the people in power under Jamie Dimon in the New York office went to Harvard. It's like a club. You didn't go to Harvard, you can only go so far. It's a true story. John 630, the information taught at any school is equivalent. The big advantage of a name school is the connections you can make. 773, I find it ironic. This story dropped the same day WGN did a story on homeless DePaul students. The juxtaposition of socioeconomic classes is mind-blowing. This person said, John, that texter who said that calculus is the same at SIU or Stanford, a high-achieving college versus any other lower ranked college, is absolutely untrue. The rigor of schedule, curriculum, and expectations is infinitely more difficult at high-achieving schools. And then they go on to tell about how when their daughter got into Notre Dame versus Loyola, the curriculum was so much harder at Notre Dame.
I kind of agree with that.
I suppose that must be true. I thought when I read that, I said it's true, calculus is calculus, but I could see how at least the competition maybe in the class is more difficult at a high-ranked
school.
There's
also competition among the teachers because the teachers want to be there too.
Yeah. As opposed to a teacher's assistant, you mean?
No, as opposed to...
Oh, you get better teachers.
Yeah.
Well, somebody said this too. John, when you talk about the college scandal, a derivative topic to consider is the abundant use of AI-based resume screeners, which overweight selective colleges. This lazy HR practice does not present qualified applicants from good but liberal arts colleges. That is, say at WGN Radio, if we got 1,000 resumes to work here, we would have a computer screen them.
It's all about the keywords.
It would look for keywords and numbers, And even though you went to a good liberal arts school and are rich in your understanding of the world, it's hard to quantify for a computer.
Mm-hmm. That's why connections are so important.
That's what a lot of you are saying. That's what they're buying here. It's not a better education. So thanks for your calls and texts on that. We'll continue to pursue this subject for the rest of your lives. Peter Greenberg is a travel consultant and has a lot to say about this Max 8 and Max 9 story. Peter, welcome back to WGN. How are you? He just hung up. Sounded like I heard a little background noise from an airport.
Maybe his flight was canceled.
How ironic would that be? Peter Greenberg, welcome to WGN in Chicago. How are you?
I am good, sir.
Are you at an airport right now?
I just came from an airport, as a matter of fact. I'm actually in Cleveland today.
Were you flying on one of those Max jets?
Actually, I flew on one of them 2 days ago.
What did you think? Were you apprehensive when you were on that plane?
I was not, and I'll tell you why. Because when Boeing discovered this software problem, they never told the pilots initially, and then the Lion Air crash happened. Then they did tell the U.S. operators not only about the problem, but about a temporary fix that they could install and activate to stop the system from overriding the pilot's ability to control the plane. So the U.S. pilots of Southwest and American and United were properly briefed and trained. The real issue here was, where else did the memo not get out? Did it not get to Ethiopia or to other carriers around the world? And remember, we're only talking about a short-term fix here, but it is right now an existing problem. So the idea of the FAA now, just a few minutes ago, grounding all the 737 MAX 8s and 9s is not a surprise.
Peter Greenberg is talking to us about this MAX 8 and MAX 9 jets that the president has grounded. And you said that while you believe that the U.S. air carriers had the fix for the software problem, you still think, Peter, that the planes rightly should be grounded. Finish that thought.
Sure. They have a temporary fix on the software problem if pilots are properly trained into when to engage it. Because let's review what this problem was. The system that's on the plane now was designed so that if it detected that the plane was about to enter a stall, it would immediately point the nose downward, because every good pilot will tell you that's what you do in a situation like that to get your airspeed up. However, what happens if it detects it and it's not correct information, and it points the nose downward and doesn't allow the pilot to override that decision and correct it? That's what we think may have happened with Lion Air in Indonesia, and what may have happened with Ethiopian Air 2.5 days ago. So that's the problem here. They have to fix the long-term problem with a long-term solution. And people are now operating from not only an abundance of caution, but an abundance of fear. Simply because they don't know the answers.
I understand that, but I like the chances of us figuring out the software solution and fixing the planes. This is a tragedy times two, but I'm encouraged that it's not pilot error, it's not sabotage, and it's not a mechanical problem. It's a software thing that I would imagine is very fixable.
Well, we still don't know the actual results yet of the investigation, but based on just the anecdotal information that we have, I would tend to agree with you. And remember, we're living in a situation right now for the last 20 years where pilots don't fly planes as much as they monitor systems. And where pilots really earn their money is when they actually fly the plane. And if you limit or obstruct the pilot's opportunity to fly the plane, that's a recipe for disaster.
Peter Greenberg, then you may agree with the president today, who tweeted, "Airplanes are becoming far too complex to fly. Pilots are no longer needed, but rather computer scientists from MIT. I see it all the time, always seeking to go one unnecessary step further when old and simpler is better. Split-second decisions are needed, and the complexity creates danger. All of this for great cost, yet very little gain. I don't know about you, but I don't want Albert Einstein to be my pilot. I want great flying professionals." What do you make of that?
Well, the president's knowledge of aviation may be accidental here. I will just make that suggestion. But I will say this. He does raise a point when we allow technology to take precedence over common sense. And we can't always engineer common sense. We have to, it's intuitive, it's experience. When we were hiring pilots in the 40s, the 50s, and the 60s, and the 70s, most of them came from the military, where they had tremendous experience flying under extreme conditions where they had to make those split-second decisions. Today, They're not coming from the military. What's the military doing? They're developing, you know, drones.
Yeah.
And the people who are flying the drones are essentially very sophisticated gamers. So, you know, the president does have a point, but there's a deeper issue here. And the deeper issue is, when you have a problem, when did Boeing know they had it, and what did they do about it, and how did they disseminate that information in a way that could be accepted, embraced, and learned? And that's going to be an investigation that's ongoing.
Are you worried about this software problem in other air carriers, other planes besides the MAX?
Well, there have been problems with software in other planes. You may remember, because if you want to Google it, you can see it. When Airbus first developed their first commercial passenger jet, they had a situation there where they had a software system on the plane that would actually override the pilot if it thought the pilot was making a wrong decision. And the pilot, in this particular case, was doing a test flight with all the press in France, out of Toulouse. And he lowered the plane down to show them, you know, how low the plane could go, and blah, blah, blah. The software system on the plane thought the pilot was landing. And it set the plane up for landing, and the pilot tried to override the system. It wouldn't listen to him. It wouldn't correct. And the plane flew right into the trees.
Well, it does make you wonder about the sort of independence that the pilots have or should have. This isn't a problem for me to fix or worry about, but I hope the industry's paying attention to that.
Well, most pilots will tell you this: when in doubt, fly the plane. But if you're not allowed to fly the plane, yeah, because you yourself are being overridden by a computer program, that doesn't give me a great good feeling.
And lastly, though, Peter, but I mean, okay, so the 7s, the 8s and 9s are on the ground now. I'm
yeah,
flying to Cleveland tomorrow on another carrier. You have... I presume you're going to tell me I can be confident in the software and the mechanics of all the other planes that are flying over the U.S. right now or the world.
Yes, I would tell you that.
Well, tell it like you really mean it then. Tell me like you're going to help me here.
All right, I'm going to tell you this. In the last 10 years, we've celebrated, seriously celebrated, the safest era in commercial aviation since commercial aviation began. We only had one fatal accident, and that was Colgan Air 10 years ago, back in February of 2009. That's a remarkable record, and the only question that we have right now is not whether we can improve that, because it's so good, it's whether we can maintain it. And grounding these planes is a good step towards that direction.
What a pleasure to talk to you. This has been very helpful today, Peter. I appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule.
You got it, John.
On Twitter, WGN Radio just tweeted out, "What's got you smiling this week? Comment here and tell us by 11 a.m. on the 15th for the chance to win a limited edition Big League pin. It's a pin that says, 'The Bright Side's got a nice smile face.' We award them on Fridays to some of you who call in with your Bright Sides. You can win them digitally, too. Make sure you like WGN Radio on Twitter, and right now tell us your Bright Side, and you could win of those pins. So far, only a couple people have commented, so, well, we got about 100 last time. Jump in there right now, and I like your chances. Let's head into the WGN Radio Studio A. By the way, Rokan, you can comment on this, too, if you don't mind.
All right, then.
John, waiting on the flying report. I am booked on Southwest Airlines for the middle of April. I'm worrying and thinking about renting a car instead. What do you think?" Peter Greenberg just said you can fly with confidence. What would your advice be, Ro?
I would fly with confidence, too. First of all, the MAX fleet has been grounded until they come up with a resolution to it, a final resolution. We've got a 737 MAX instructor.
Wow.
Who's going to join us in the 4 o'clock hour to talk about this. So to give us a sense of what really is going on here in the pilot community. Because, listen, these people don't want to crash either, right? I mean, the pilots know. They're the ones who would know the best about how this is working. They have to be there all the time.
When there's turbulence and stuff, I think this whole airplane crew is now going to get on the airplane and go the other way. They fly every day, all day long.
Right.
There's planes. There's hundreds of thousands of people in the sky at any given time.
Right. That's that Flight Radar 24 that you see a bunch of people using it. It's the best app ever for your phone or your iPad or whatever, because you get to see every plane in the air in the world at any given moment.
Where it is, too.
And it's, yes, where it is, and the telemetry from it and all of that. It is amazing when you stop and you think, oh, my God. And especially when you zoom out, so you're looking at, like, the entire Western Hemisphere, and it's just filled with aircraft.
So it's a very safe. Aviation is by and large very, very safe. But obviously they got to fix this situation, and we'll find out about that. But I would not overly think this now that they're going to come up with a solution. And perhaps the solution was just simply a training solution, but you just want to make sure that whatever they say, there's a software adjustment they
want to
make.
Right. That's what I'm hearing.
Yeah. So,
what else are you doing today?
We got Maria Pappas. She's the Cook County Treasurer. There are 57,300 property owners that are about to lose their homes.
Why is that?
And some of them don't even know it.
Why is that?
Because of property taxes.
Oh.
And we'll tell you how to make sure that you are up to date on all of that, and even if you have investment property or stuff like that. And also to help people understand, you know, what that means. Remember, Willie Wilson made a big deal about that in the election.
He did?
Yeah, about people getting their homes.
Willie, if you're listening, I'm sorry. I didn't pay close enough attention to
that. Not here. And then Tom Skilling will be here to tell us about this really crazy, the micro bomb or whatever the hell they're calling it.
I wish they wouldn't call it that.
I know. I don't want to hear the word bomb is never good, but whatever that thing is going to be, the air bomb. What do they call that?
It's the
bomb cyclone.
Bomb. That's even worse.
Bomb cyclone. The bomb cyclone is going to hit. What is it going to do to affect us? And we are introducing you to our brand new cast member.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Yes. I was a little jealous. I thought I would be the one to first chat with her on the air tomorrow. But no, you would get her as a guest.
You guys are already fighting over her. Come on, guys.
Technically, I get to introduce her tomorrow in the first newscast.
So,
oh, look at that.
Bam.
Well, but you know what the real bam is? I'm going to introduce her right after you people are done with your news and your traffic and all the rest of it.
I'm not going to be listening. Goodbye. Bye.
Very sensitive around here.